Welcome to Nexus 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I'm your host, Doc JC. This episode of Nexus 818 Podcast features the Montfort Port Marines. After 144 years of exclusion due to segregation, approximately 20,000 African American men were admitted into the Marine Corps. For their valiant service to our nation, these Marines were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal in November of 2011. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out episode 27 from October the 4th of 2023 to learn about the background of the Montfort Point Marines. I am pleased to welcome to episode 32 the descendants of Corporal Arnold Anthony Smith, who served in the Montfort Point Marines. My guests tonight are Anthony Smith and Sonia Smith King, son and granddaughter of Corporal Arnold Anthony Smith. Welcome, Anthony and Sonia.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I always like to start with a few interesting facts. First, Arnold's parents came to the U.S. via Ellis Island. His father came from India through Trinidad to the United States, and his mother came from Dutch Guyana. Second, Anthony's wife was one of the first Black women police officers in the New York City Police Department. And third, many Montfort Port Marines served stateside only. Anthony, however, served in the combat zone in the Pacific Theater of Operation, Pearl Harbor, Okinawa, Saipan, and Tangu, China. So those are some interesting facts about Arnold and the family. Now let's go some more into talking about Arnold. He was born in Harlem, New York in 1925, I believe.
Yeah.
And so how old was he at the time that he enlisted?
24.
Okay. So what was he doing at the time of enlistment?
He was a mail clerk. Oh, he was a photographer. And then when he got out, he was a mail clerk for a short period of time.
Okay. So was he a freelance photographer or was he working for?
Freelance.
Okay. All right. This is kind of a sidebar, but do you have any of his photography, any pictures?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Those things are always fun. If you can find them somewhere buried in the basement, they're always fun to have.
My brother has some reels, not reels to reels, but some video or whatever, some movies.
Right. The old 16 millimeter films. So when you were growing up, what did he tell you about why he decided to enlist? Or did he ever say anything about that?
He never said anything.
Okay. Do you know how his parents or your grandparents reacted to his decision to enlist?
From my understanding, his father, my grandparents were proud to have their son serve. Being from a different country, to have a U.S. citizen son serve his country was a big deal.
Right. But it was a difficult time for African Americans in the 40s. It's said that Black soldiers had to fight a two-front battle. Victory for my enemies without and victory over our enemies at home. So it was, I considered it kind of an act of valor to enlist under those circumstances. What do you think made your dad so special?
I would have to say he learned it from his parents. Traveling from India to Trinidad, from Trinidad to Ellis Island, and becoming a U.S. citizen, he had to learn it from his parents.
Okay, because your family has a very unique and interestingly blended family, which we'll talk some more about in a moment. Fascinating story, because I've been interviewing people for the last year and a half from the 6AAA to now the Montfort Port Marines, and have not talked to anyone before who had family members who came in through Ellis Island. Happy to hear your story as well. So I know that Arnold was a corporal when he was in the Marines. What was his specialty?
I really don't know on that part. I would have to review his paperwork.
Okay, Sonia, I don't know. Do you know what area your granddad worked in?
No, they didn't have that down on our paperwork. I think they just, from the paperwork we had, they talked about the different I guess the artillery that he when he was going over to fight. So that's kind of where we start in his kind of journey as a Marine.
Okay, so he was what, an ammunition company? Is that what?
Correct.
Okay, all right. I'm interested in any stories that he shared about his time in the service, any adventures, or painful or scary or funny memories.
The only one that is a family record is when he was home and he was wearing his Marine dress uniform. He wanted to go to church, the Catholic Church, before he went overseas.
Right.
And they wouldn't allow him to go to church.
What, because he had on the uniform?
Well, because he was black, they
Okay.
wouldn't. He was going to a Catholic church. That's what is my grandparents raised him as, Catholic.
So
And
this
he was.
I think it goes to your point, Doc, about the fighting of the two, that time
Two
period.
fronts, okay.
That, yeah, the two fronts that you brought up, this being the South during this time. One of the travesties is, the racism that was going on at that time, and even for the enlisted, they weren't immune to that. So I think that's the story that my dad is sharing that has kind of was the one that kind of stuck out from them sharing of that story of just not being able to even go to his place of worship as a Marine before being shipped out.
Okay, so yeah, I've not been to Montford Point, that area, so I'm not sure, because it's because in other parts of the South, I grew up in the South, and there've been for hundreds of years black Catholic churches, but there might not have been anywhere he was stationed at that time, obviously. So,
Well, to bring a little clarity to it, Munford Point was next door to Fort Bragg
right.
in North Carolina. I mean, yeah, in North Carolina. So, and they couldn't go to the fort, to the military base, because they had to be with white officers.
Okay.
So they had black enlisted. They had to be with a white officer before they could go anywhere. So it was a little hard getting around.
Right. Yeah, it's bad when you can't even go to church in peace. It's tough times. I'd like to hear more about what your dad did when he completed his military service, his education, career, community activism, anything like that.
He, when I gave you the date, that was the wrong. He was younger than that when he joined the Corps.
Okay.
He is doing the subtractions from when he joined NYPD.
Okay.
He when he got out, he they said, on reading his documents, they said he was a mail clerk. And then he joined NYPD in 1949.
Okay.
My mother also was there, and that's how they met.
NYPD.
Right. Which is New York Police Department.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you know if your dad was able to take advantage of the GI Bill? And if so, how did he use it?
I don't know if he did or not. We never discussed it.
Okay.
Really, he was very, very humble about it. He was very quiet. And we knew more about his police work than we did about him being a Marine.
Now, I ask this question whenever I interview people because I know that some African American military veterans did not had difficulty getting access to the GI Bill, and others had no difficulty. So I was just curious. And again, it's often used either to go to college or to buy a first home. And
I
so I
believe,
just,
I'm sorry. I apologize for that.
no, please go ahead.
I believe he did use it to buy the home in Queens.
Okay, that would make sense. Do you recall any lessons that he learned through his time in the service that he passed on to the family? Any family values or traditions that you think can trace back to his service?
I would say humility.
I didn't know that the Marines taught you humility. Ahead.
Well,
No, go
and
ahead.
when I mentioned that he was a Mumford Point Marine, people are like, "Oh, he was one bad mother," you know. And this was way before Shaft used that
Right.
link. No, they were very, very quiet about what they did and where they served. So humility was one, service to God and country was another. And that's what I got from it because it came time for me to serve and I was given the opportunity to go to Canada, but I knew that that wouldn't have been what my dad would have wanted. So I enlisted.
Okay, we're going to segue right now to the family the family story. So Anthony had three children, two sons and a daughter, and so I'm interested in learning about the three of you guys. Anthony, so you served, you did something unique. You served in both the Air Force and the Army.
Yes, it was for me. I got my draft notice and my number was number 95, and I knew that they weren't going to stop at 94. So I went into New York City and went to the different branches, and my scores were high enough to rank me qualified for the Air Force, which even though it was integrated, it was still a hard, a difficult time for, because it was 1970. So I enlisted in the Air Force.
And how long did you serve in the Air Force?
Till the end of Vietnam, from
Okay.
June of 75.
And so th and then so then you went and enlisted in the Army after that? Or were you
Yes.
on, okay.
The Army wanted my skills and my knowledge, and I had a family, and I didn't go back home. So the Army was, they took me in, they gave me the same rank, and I went into field artillery.
Okay, so that was your specialty.
Yes.
Okay, so now you have two siblings. You want to tell me about them?
Well, there's David and then there's Nancy. Nancy's the oldest on that side of the family. I'm the oldest of both families. I'm the patriarch now of both families.
So, granddad, just to clarify, granddad, so you are the only product of the two that we're talking about, grandfather and grandmother. So,
Right.
and then they divorced
Okay.
and both remarried. So my father is the only son of Dorothy and Arnold. And then they, when they remarried, they both had two more children. And then my grandfather had a son and a daughter. And then my grandmother, who remarried, had two daughters. So
Okay.
there's a total, yeah, there's a total of five of them. And my father's the eldest.
Okay, thanks for the clarification, as I got lost there for a moment.
Yeah, no, it's easy to do. I just want to say, some of my, I think my father's kind of leaving out when you talked about the attributes that he learned. I think they were both very strong, I think, in their, I think you had to be so they were, I think they, from my, from listening in and the time that, the brief time that we got to visit, and also hearing from my mother, who spent time with both, and she's never been one to be afraid of anybody, but and she enjoyed both of them, but she knew that they were both, I mean, tough. And I think that kind of trickled down into, raising my father as well. So I think they were both very, whether it was from the military or from their time in the NYPD, I just think you can't get away from not being, have some kind of regiment about yourself and hold yourself, to a high standard and really not have very much room for, shenanigans, really.
Right, just that personal discipline. So,
That's right.
son,
So.
you have a very interesting career. So you are a critical care nurse turned designer, and you founded a clothing company and a co-founder and president of a nonprofit. Please tell me more about your education and your career.
I'm right. You talked about, early on in, as we were talking about the culture of my, great grandparents and their, immigrant in the immigrant story. And I think it just kind of took on something that was just not even just genetic. It was just something that I really enjoy learning about different cultures, and with doing, having those as my great grandparents, and then, having my mother, whose side of the family is Latina, it was quite interesting. I went to school, I became a critical care nurse. And then I married my husband, who is Korean American. And so being very intentional with what we wanted to do and what who we, all the products and the stuff that we wanted to bring into our home, we really loved the idea of the kids knowing all their history. And so that just requires, a lot of talking and talking to my parents and trying to get the history out of them. And so there was a lot of strength that we found in cultural garments that, my husband would put on Korean hanboks onto the kids, and the sense of pride, and having on my Latino side, having some folklorico wear, or it was just really special. So I decided to source fabric from my cultures and just turn them into everyday clothes that tell a story. So for me, it's really about telling the story, and which is kind of how it led us to discovering, my grandfather and his history as a Montfort Point Marine. We've always known he was in the service, but, and in talking with my dad, really pinpointed, the actual being a Montfort Point Marine. And what does that mean? Everybody knows, kind of about the Buffalo Soldier and those kind of things, just, but they did not know as much about what it meant to be a Montfort Point Marine. And so my father had done so much research and got the ball rolling with, talking about who he was, what he did, and all the accolades. I mean, he was there on the first day of fighting in the war. And, so together we just kind of went on this path of exploration, and it's just kind of who we are as a family, is kind of discovering your history.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you more about the clothing line in a second, but want to give a shout out to we have an institution in common. So you want to give a shout out to your alma mater?
Absolutely. I am a proud Don, graduate of the University of San Francisco,
All
class
right.
of 97, School of Nursing. That's right.
All right. Yes. We have that in common. Although I didn't graduate from that, I worked there for a while, so
That's right.
it's nice to see
Yes.
a fellow Don. You mentioned the sourcing material. I'm sure that my audience would be happy to try to check out your clothing line. So you want to kind of give us a website or some contact information? We'll share that. We'll share that website.
Sure. Yeah, our website, thank you, is mixedupclothing.com, and our social media on all platforms is at Mixed Up Clothing.
So that's MIXED up. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah,
One
up and then clothing, one word.
word. Okay. And you also have a nonprofit. Want to talk about that?
Yeah, and it's again all part of, I feel like a broken record at this point. For us, it's just really about, I think, really turning the tables on, for so long not being able to talk about your culture and your, what makes you and your history. So the nonprofit that we have is called Multiracial Americans of Southern California. It's been in existence for over 35 years. We were instrumental in getting working with the US Census and getting a check more than one box
Okay.
on the US Census, so that if you like my own family and one of the fastest growing populations do have more than one culture, ethnicity, you are able to put that down and be counted. So
Your children get to check a lot of boxes.
they sure do. And there's a lot of talk about that because, even on school forms, even to this day, 20, there's sometimes it's pick one.
Right.
And so that and that's always been a challenge. So that's some of the work that we try to do with the nonprofit, is getting, federal guidelines, and folks to follow federal guidelines and be able to, put down all that you are.
Right. It's very important.
It is.
Very, very important not to be put into one box. So
Right.
I want to talk a little bit about legacy and influence. When we spoke a couple of weeks ago, Sonia, you talked about Black folks passing on generational trauma. And so I want you to just talk a little bit about that. And what was the context for for that statement about Black folks and generational
Yeah.
trauma?
Yeah, I think depending on the specifically, I think here if we were talking about my grandfather, and some of the probably horrific things he faced, not only in war, but also fighting a system that did not see Black folks as human. There's no way around, the pain and the sadness that and the trauma that can be brought and carried into your DNA and passed along, to my father, and then to others. So I think the generational trauma is something that I think a lot of us have to work through as Black folks, not just us, but really kind of seeing what, the society ills that have, kind of formed in our our blood. And so, the fight that always has to happen and the courage that you have to have. And so I think those kind of things, I think it's important to really discuss if we can try and move forward and get to a place that we can heal.
How would you, if this is not a, if it's too personal or too painful, either Sonia or Anthony, how would you, how was that generational trauma manifested in your family?
And mine are my daughters.
Well, we'll start with your
Either
family.
one.
Either one, it's the same family, yeah.
Okay. Well, I went, my mother was a proponent of education. So she sent me to the South in the 60s to North Carolina to Laurinburg Institute. It was a black school in Laurinburg, North Carolina. And I faced, and that was during the 60s, so the marches, the sit-ins in the cafeteria in the Woolworths, having to use the back stairs to get to the movie theater, eating day-old popcorn from the white side of the theater. It, my daughter hit on it. It taught me to be resilient because I had, coming from New York, I didn't face any of that. And now I'm considered black down there, a Negro. One event that stands out for me personally is when I went to get my hair cut. The barber started cutting my hair because of the texture of it. But when my roommate from Laurinburg came in, he realized I wasn't Native American and he stopped cutting my hair in mid cut and told me I had to go across the tracks to have my hair cut finished. And that was something that I was not used to. I faced off with Ku Klux Klansmen, and it taught me that when I got a chance to do something positive, which was join the military, I was going to do it to make it better for the generations that came after me.
Well, I can say that was in the 60s, right? When you were in North Carolina.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I think you and I think we agreed you and I are contemporaries because all of those things you discussed were things that I grew up with. I haven't been born in the Deep South. So I you know, when I've talked to black folks who were from places like New York or maybe even up in New England, there are many things that were different in that part of the country from in the Deep South.
It was.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents were considered interracial marriages. I mean, was considered an interracial marriage, but it was accepted. And down there, you get in trouble looking the wrong way.
That definitely was true. Well, go
And
ahead.
my three are resilient because they are multi-ethnic, and but they had their struggles,
Yeah.
and very proud of them.
You want to talk a little bit about that, Sonia?
Well, I think just, I think what he's probably talking about is it kind of does go back to, the check more than, check one box type of thing. And, not being, black enough for black folks or Latin enough for Latin folks, that kind of stems from, I think society's not accepting of, you know, interracial folks at the time. You know, I'm born in the 70s, raised in the 80s and 90s. So I think, you know, growing up, I think was a challenge. You know, going to a predominantly Latino school with the surname Smith didn't, you know, always make sense to folks. And so I think folks really kind of look at you and try to figure out, you know, who you are, what you are. And so I think those are some of the things he, you know, he might be talking about that
Okay.
was very challenging. And I think that's, again, the push for some of the work that I, you know, continue to do in the space of healing and talking about, you know, some of the traumas and that folks can go through, folks of color specifically is the work that I try to highlight. And I think that goes back to one of the solutions is knowing your history. You know, they being, you know, the US took our history and we don't always know and can trace back, you know, our people. And so it's really, you know, the work that I try to do and I try to you know, that I how we got to this place and meeting wonderful folks like you and Mallory is really just continuing to dig. And, you know, I feel like I'm maybe I should have been a detective at one point because I and we talk about going down rabbit holes. Like I love it. And I love and all of it is just to continue to answer, you know, the why and
Yep.
who are my people, how, you know, how did they get here? You know, and being proud of that history. And you know, we talk about being our ancestors' wildest dreams. Well, that means, you know, finding out what more about them. And so, you know, getting on the different genealogy pages and trying to discover, you know, surnames and tracing it back. And a lot of, you know, a lot of our history, like I said, has just been kept and missing. And, you know, even if I brought it back to who we're here talking about, my grandfather Arnold, you know, his paper, his documents, when we requested them, were told that they were in stellar condition because there was an actually a fire that took place. And a lot of the military, you know, documents of some of the Marines were destroyed. So we were very fortunate that my grandfather's papers were kept and they were able to find them. You
And
know the numbers as, yeah, go
it wasn't
ahead.
just the Marines. That happened to the Air Force. It happened to the Army, as
Wow.
well. That fire, because it was
Wow.
at the National Center in Kansas.
Got it.
Right.
So yeah, because it's funny.
Yeah.
I was able to get my mother's records from the 6888 service, but my father was in the Korean conflict, and when we tried to get his records, they said, "Well, no, those must have burned in the fire."
Wow.
Yeah. So and he was 6 years younger. So it's you just. This, yeah. But I do want to ask. Go ahead. Go right in.
No, I was just, I, you know, you brought up, you know, the point where, when we did find the documents and they sent them to us, you know, the gentleman, the archivist, who sent me the, you know, the documents and said, did you know your grandfather would be eligible for, and he started rattling off all these different medals and recognition. And I think that's one of the hardest things to kind of swallow. And my father and I have talked about it is, you know, they're his the folks that he served with, they're getting these awards, you know, posthumously. And, you know, What a difference. I can only imagine it would have been. Maybe books could have been changed, history could have been changed if they received the recognition that they deserved.
That's our
And I think,
that's our job to go back and make sure that this happens.
correct,
Yes. So that
correct.
and look, they're looking down, they're smiling down, and they know what we're doing. So
That's right.
yeah,
That is right.
because this work is so important to connect that next generation. That's
Yes.
why this is so important, because they need to understand that it's not just us, that it's people who lay this whole foundation to make everything we do possible. So, and
Yes,
that they then have an obligation to future generations as well.
I hear you, and I really love that. I love, that when we got connected, and you're using this platform, and it's all about sharing and bringing up these stories. But I cannot help but be pained by, how it could have easily have changed, the course of families. I think if the recognition, so again, on one side, believe me, we are working, we will do whatever we can. My father and I have sat on different media, sites, and told our story, and covered in different news outlets. Like we're sharing. But I still, on that other hand, I'm like, man, what would life have been like for them had they, received this, or had they, were able to, move around more freely, or given this recognition at the time. It's hard, and I'm thankful, and I thank you for saying that they're looking down and feeling that, because that's important.
Yeah. I do want to ask you something. You made a comment earlier about not exactly fitting in any particular place because of your multi-ethnic background. Now, the name Smith, okay, you mentioned that. So your grandfather, who was a Smith, came over to Ellis Island. Was he a Smith?
That is my grandfather came from India to Trinidad. I
Right.
believe he tra changed his name when he got to Trinidad,
Okay.
and he met my grandmother, who is Dutch Guiana off the coast of Venezuela. And then my grandfather and grandmother migrated to Ellis Island. My dad was born in Harlem.
Okay, so they, but when they, the name was Smith when they came to Ellis Island.
I believe so. I have to go back into the archives of the Ellis Island records and see, because I did find the ship that they came over on, and they signed the book. So that is documented.
That's fascinating. Have you tried to go back or have to figure out the name, his name before his last name before he changed it? Or is that a rabbit hole for Sonya?
You know
No.
what? Listen, that is you and I. That is a call, like you and Mallory. She's the also who. So to great grandfather was Oswald Smith. So yes, he came through as a Smith. So as we know, the Smiths, and I know where you're coming, and I'd love to, hear more, because on our other side, it, like a Smith coming through from India just doesn't make sense. Like, and from Trinidad. So I listen, this is, I hear the project coming,
Absolutely.
because I
Listen.
know, you're like, look, let me tell you where Smith comes from. And I know, and so, yeah, it is definitely something that, again, I cannot stress to folks to to ask these questions. You know, our God loved, you know, our elders, but they really kept stuff from us. And you got to ask these questions because, you know, it is so important to know who you are and, you know, the pride that comes from knowing this rich history.
Well, we've got one of those. My grandfather's middle name was Guggenberger. We cannot for the life of us figure out where that came from. We know where he was born. There are no plantations in that part of the country. We have no idea where that name came from. That's another one. That's one of my projects. So
yes, I just wrote it down on my post-it, and it'll definitely keep me up. You know, we were lucky enough to have on my dad's maternal his mother's side, who loves, you know, digging deep and going into genealogies with me. So so we're gonna tag team and look up some stuff, because I know they came through Virginia, which as we most know, that, you know, that's one of the ships that came through and settled here in the colonies. So I think those kind of things are interesting. Like, yes, how did Smith even come to be? I mean, an Oswald. I mean, those are questions that just beg to be answered.
See, a handful of us with these mystery names should probably do like a week-long genealogy retreat at Martha's Vineyard or someplace like that. Just dive right, spend the whole week just going to trying to find this information. But
well, listen, and take those of us that are not as tech savvy as you, and walk us through this, because that is amazing.
We need Mallory for that. That's Mallory.
That's true. That's true. I'm sign me up.
I'm wondering how your grandfather's, or in this one case, your dad's experiences in the Marines influence and shape your life, career, and decisions. And then that's for each of you. What kind of influence do you think his experiences in the Marines had on the decisions that you made? I suspect, Anthony, part of the answer for you is the fact that you enlisted twice in two different branches. That's probably an influence from your dad.
Right. I wanted to be forthcoming. I wanted to be a career Air Force. But when Vietnam ended, I did not serve in Vietnam, but I'm Vietnam era vet, Air Force veteran. I wanted to stay in the Air Force and do 20 years because I had two adorable daughters, and I wanted to give them a good life. And the Army, so my job ended in the Air Force, but the Army said, hey, your scores are better than most of our scores, so we'd like for you to to enlist, and I did. Growing up, I didn't know the only West Indies I knew were Jamaica and Barbados.
Okay.
Those were the only two West Indies that I knew. Even though I heard, you know, dad and grandpa saying they were from Trinidad. But growing up in Queens, I was mistaken for everything. And I assimilated to the Puerto Rican culture because everybody knew where Puerto Rico was.
But Nasanya, weren't you born in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, that I think that's kind of what messes folks up, because, you know, if I tell folks I'm Black and Mexican, they're like, oh, you're Puerto Rican. And I'm like, man, no, it's not like two, you know, a yellow and a blue make, you know, something else. But then it gets worse. I mean, because I'm like, but I was born in Puerto Rico. And so folks are like, oh, but that was because My parents were based on in Aguadilla, Puerto Rico, while they were serving. So that's how we were born. But I do want to say, my dad did pretty much follow in the sense where I think he needed a lot of, or he kind of moved towards those careers that were structured. So, after the military, there was I think he was also in for different forms of law enforcement, whether that was immigration and naturalization services, and then now his time in San Diego working is that for the Navy? So I think his natural course kind of has always been one of to serve, and so I think that also comes from probably what he grew up with, and the that sense of to protect and serve. So I think when you ask about how does that influence, and how does their the legacy, my sister is also in law enforcement, and she's kind of that in that way similar. My brother and I didn't necessarily go the I'm too chicken to go down any dark alley. So I would not be a good person in law enforcement, and my brother is also very, I mean, in kind of the structured way, but he's an engineer. So I think for us, again, it just kind of goes back to we love learning, and I think that's kind of the idea that their legacy has kind of brought us to a place of enjoying the fact finding mission, the learning about others, the having heroes as grandparents, being not only my grandfather, who was a Montrook Point Marine, but coming back to serve as one of the first Black police officers for the NYPD, and my grandmother being not only one of the first Black women to serve as well. So I think our legacy is one of a great amount of pride and love of country, as my dad mentioned.
So how old was Otto when he passed?
He was 60 something. He passed 11 days before I graduated college. And it was the first time in my, other than my birth certificate, that I was using my true and correct name.
Well, let me first, where'd you graduate college? And then I want you to tell me about the true and correct name.
Okay, I graduated from Wayland Baptist University. It was in Hawaii, and it's in Plainview, Texas, but they had campuses on the military bases. And when I was in the Army, General Harry Brooks, who was a Black general, he told all the commanders that if they had any soldier who wanted to go to school, they were to go to school and they were not to be interfered with. I was the first, I ran people over to get in that line because
So,
education was very important to me.
and you're saying about your name, you're saying, I mean, your name, so our my grandfather Arnold, you're saying he's an Arnold, my father's an Arnold, he just Arnold Anthony, but he is that what you're saying, Dad?
Yeah, I transposed it because growing up, kids were cruel, and Green Acres was on TV, and the ridicule was, yeah,
Arnold the
Arnold.
pig? Oh, gee.
Well, so so
Is
okay,
it? Oh my goodness.
so your birth name is Arnold Anthony. You a junior, you're a junior?
Yes.
And but you reversed it to Anthony Arnold so that kids wouldn't call you Arnold by your first, would call you Anthony rather
Correct.
than Arnold. Okay, I got you.
Well, that and my mother, their grandmother would call us Arnold, and we didn't know who was getting in trouble. So my mother called me Anthony Arnold and Dad Arnold Anthony. So could tell the difference so we could laugh at each other. Oh, you're going to get it today. Oh, no, son. Your turn.
so your dad was young when he passed.
Yes, he
Is
was.
yeah. Is he interred at a veteran cemetery or a family cemetery?
He's interred in a veteran cemetery out on Long Island.
Okay, Long Island. Okay. So it was a significant honor for Arnold to receive the Congressional Gold Medal. When did you find out? I mean, I know it was awarded in 2011. Did you find out at that time, or was it something more recent once Maui and the Montreport Marine Association tracked you guys down? Is that how you found out about it?
No, ma'am,
No,
it was
yeah,
my daughter. It was
yeah,
the
we
Texas Sheriff.
yes, I would like to be known as my honorary title of detective. It was, I don't know, like most folks who go down rabbit holes, I have bouts of insomnia, and I happened to find on social media a article from ABC News, and it talked about there were about I think 20,000 soldiers and Montfort Point Marines, and it just kind of, this was recent, this was maybe within the last 3 years, the article went out, and it said, at the end, it said, if you or a family member is a Montfort Point or know of, and I was like, ooh, I remember my, and I kept saying, I remember my father talking about it. Could it be? And then verified it with him. And he said, I wrote, and this is, he loves a good letter. He wrote to anybody who would listen, and say, hey, my father served here, so it was just, he had started the paperwork, he's got all the documents there together. The world was moving towards, being on computer, and so when I saw the article, I put in my information, and within a day, Mallory, who has become such an amazing friend and person in arms here with us in the fight to get those folks recognized. She gave me, this step by step of how to go about it. You're gonna need this document, and then we're gonna pass it over to this person in charge of the Montfort Point Association. And it just within, I would say, 2 weeks, I was shopping for dinner, and I got a call from one of the Montfort Point folks, and he said, congratulations, I got all your paperwork. How would you and your family like to be presented? And I was like, whoa. It was just amazing. And was it last year or 2 years now that we received my grandfather's recognition?
How did you feel? I mean, what was the immediate reaction from when you found out that he had won a Congressional Gold Medal?
Well, for me, I'll let my dad share his feeling, but for me, I nearly, dropped the chicken. That I was, I was elated when I tell you, and it wasn't necessarily just for my grandfather, but it was for, knowing that my father had put so much time and energy, into writing what could have been his dissertation, the amount of paperwork that he had gathered to see that kind of to see the light at the end, and have, the work that he had started to do to get my grandfather recognized, and to know that, something that you thought perhaps was just a dream, could it be to have it come to fruition? And it's beautiful. I just can't. I think we were, when I tell you they were like, come to, it was a Marine, their ball, so it was their, to be in the presence of, these heroes. We were with one of the oldest original Montford Point Marines that day, and I'm speechless. I just was very. We had my dad's brother join us and my children, so it was a very, very special day to be recognized and have his name called out and shared in with the folks that were there. It's beautiful. Dad?
Yes. Yeah, my daughter, she hit the nail on the head. I started it when I heard then President Obama was giving it awarded it to the Montford Point Marines. I started writing people. And I mean, it was 10 years. It took 10 years. And her with technology, she was able to take the documents, run with it, and we were stoked. I mean, I think they told me that I was floating around the room because we were the only family that received it,
Oh,
and it was
that's even more special. She weren't part of a group, so yeah.
And
The Montford.
she did an outstanding job.
This was another Mallory production.
Yes, for sure. For
So
sure.
for the listeners, we've mentioned Mallory a couple of times. Mallory K.M. Berger, if you go back a couple of episodes, you'll hear the story of her grandfather as well. So, but anyway, glad I wanted to just make that little footnote for the audience.
Yes, please. Again, it's really, something that she told us once we, had the information, and she followed us through the whole process and wanted the photos. There wasn't any, we felt like we were held the whole time. And once you enter, this brotherhood, it became, even more of a special place and a special, event. To, again, to share that with my children, and to, to get them to now be able to say when they're mentioning, the Tuskegee Airmen and the Buffalo Soldiers, and they're like, there's one more, what about, and then when you mentioned your mother and you told me, I mean, that's like now one we need to add to our, vocabulary and pass that on, because it's up to us and our children to continue telling these stories, and for the history books that keep it out. So it's important. So I know it was a medal, but it signifies so much more than I can, ever explain.
We just found out recently that one of the six triple the oldest living 6888 soldier had two brothers who were Montford Pointers,
Wow.
and so three members of the same family, Congressional Gold Medal. Pretty incredible. Pretty
Trailblazers.
incredible.
That's
Yeah,
right.
yeah.
Yes.
So let me, I'm going to wrap up here, but I had a couple of questions. You want to share any reflections about your what your grandfather's, or in the case of Anthony, your father's life and legacy mean to you and your family? You know, when you kind of try to take a step back and look, what does his life and legacy mean to you?
To me,
Sure, yes.
reading his orders and knowing that he was in places that other people gained recognition for being, it's unbelievable that there isn't anything written. And that's, as Sonia said, that's something that needs to be done either orally or electronically or this medium here. Because, I mean, they were on Iwo Jima. I mean, they didn't talk about any Negroes being on Iwo Jima, and they were there. The Munford Pointers were there, and that was some of the fiercest battles that they had. And some of them weren't even trained. They were just there for supplies to get ammunition to the other troops. And they had to fight their way through that. So, it taught me that regardless of what history has done, that we need to serve because it's the only country we have. I mean, it ain't like we can go home. So, coming from a family that served, I made it my mission to continue serving, and I am. I started in 1970, and here it is, 2023, and I'm still on the job. It's said that you can't make a difference unless you're on the inside. And I'm doing my best to make a difference.
That's important, and we appreciate it. My final question for tonight is, I always like to end with kind of a note of inspiration for young people, young African Americans who kind of are struggling and not sure how to find their way. So I'd like to ask, what any lessons from your dad or grandfather's story that you can share to inspire young African Americans to embrace fear as opportunity so they can be their best selves? To shatter those glass ceilings and not accept the limits that some people arbitrarily impose. Any lessons or thoughts of inspiration?
Well, for me, it is, and something that I carry and I pass down to my children, and that for me is finding, truth seeking and finding out our history, and with that comes a sense of pride that no one can take, and so I feel like, I'm building them up, and letting them know, no matter what anybody says, they've got the power of, the trailblazers passing through their blood, and it's for them, that's the key to just continue to excel and succeed, and there's really no ceiling for them. That they can, if they see it and believe it, they can be it. So I think that's something that you talk about the legacy. He went in knowing all that was going on and still went in and still fought and was still, first in the, Pacific Theater. and First Marine Ammunition Company, 7th Service Field Depot. I think he taught us that, that we have the power and we're strong. And so I think those kind of things are important, our strength.
Anthony?
I am in total agreement. It's what this generation needs to do is education, education, education. Learn from your family. Learn about your ancestors, about where they're from, and take it all of it, the good, the bad, and look at it and put it to good use, because every day history is being made, and that we're living examples of it. Our family is living examples, and education was of paramount importance to my family. Dad was high school. My mother had some college. I was a college graduate. My brother's a college graduate. My three kids, college grads. And if you have something that you're passionate about, do it. Don't let nobody put a roadblock in your way. If they do, go around it, go over it, go under it,
That's
but
right.
don't let it.
That's an excellent way to kind of close out tonight. Anthony Asanya, I really want to thank you for joining us tonight and for sharing your family story. I'm really, really very grateful to you.
Likewise, thank you for allowing us to tell his story and to having this platform for us to share. And I love, love, love that there are there's folks that write books, there's folks who write movies. I think we all need to be going at it the way we can. Mine is through, sewing clothes. Yours is this amazing podcast. So I want to thank you for giving us the time to talk about him
Thank
and
you.
the other Montford Point Marines. Thank you.
And happy holidays.
Hey,
Same to
happy
you. Thank
holidays.
you so much.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Nexus 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nexus818podcast@gmail.com. That's NEXT. US 818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. The holiday season can be very stressful, and many people struggle emotionally this time of year. So tonight I'd like to share a quote from goodfulness.net to guide us as we go through difficult times. Everything can and will change. You've overcome challenges before. It's a learning experience. Not getting what you want can be a blessing. Allow yourself some time for fun. Being kind to yourself is the best medicine. Other people's negativity isn't worth worrying about. And last, there's always, always something to be thankful for. Happy holidays. See you for our next show on Wednesday, January the 3rd at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, New York City Podcast Network, and Spotify for podcasters.